So, good evening, councillors. Welcome to your personnel committee meeting. I just remind you, this meeting will be recorded and the town recording subsequently made available on the council's website. Please also know that under the Openness of Local Government Bodies Regulation 2014, that other people may film, record, tweet or log from this meeting. Use of any images or sound recording is not under the council's control. So, as usual, if you want to speak, put your hand up, and if you can announce who you are, I will call you to speak and then you can have your say. So, first item on there is any apologies? Have we had any apologies?
No.
Are we all here?
Councillor Henderson isn't here.
Right, okay, thank you. Minutes of the previous meeting, is everybody happy to accept them as a true record?
Agree.
Yep, everybody agree? Thank you. Disclosures of pecuniary and personal interests. Has anybody got any interest they want to declare? No?
No.
Okay. So the first item that we have is questions under committee procedures, and there were no questions. The next substantive item is the amendments to the policies on the human resources A to Z intranet, which there are some amendments which are highlighted. If you flick through it, there's various items on page 12, 13, 15 and 16, read the footnotes. Page 56, read data protection. Page 81 and 82, read redundancy compensation. And on page 90, read the apprenticeships. Now, what I will do is ask Gail to give us a quick summary, if I may, please, Gail.
Yes, thank you for that. Yes, I've written those page numbers down, thank you. We've in the process of amending the intranet page. Traditionally we've had an employee handbook, and this has been superseded by more modern policies and procedures. And what we've done is we've taken the employee handbook down, and we're working through all the policies and procedures and looking at, are there some minor legislative changes we need to do, or are there things on the handbook that we need to subsume into the policies and procedures? So we have one up-to-date A to Z of HR. So there will be other minor amendments coming forward. So I hope to flip through these and just give some explanation. In terms of the first one, which Councillor Barclay mentioned, the attendance management guidance document, this is the how-to-do document for managers managing attendance. There was previously a government fit for work scheme where we could refer people to fit for work, similar to an occupational health report. That has been withdrawn, so consequently we need to withdraw from that. Pages relating to the fit for work, which is probably a shame, because we did have one or two decent reports from that. But that provision is no longer available, so we've taken away reference to it. In terms of the job profile template, on page 56, we do need to include in all of our job profiles a mandatory duty that must include role posts responsible for protecting management information and security. This has come out of our recent GDPR legislation, and a little bit more good housekeeping. That's in all of our job profiles now. In terms of organisational change policy and procedure, on page 81, the amendment that it's been necessary to make relates to what constitutes a week's pay in terms of redundancy. Previously, a week's pay was exactly what it said, and didn't include any elements of employers' contribution to pensions. The change has been that anybody earning less than the statutory amount, which is £508 a week, has added to their weekly value for the terms of calculating redundancy the amount of the employer's contribution to their pension. So if they earn £400 a week and the employer's contributing 6%, then that amount is increased by 6% before the calculation is made. The statutory amount of 508, that ceases to be necessary. So that's been amended to reflect that change. In terms of guidance on the recruitment and employment of apprentices, this is very much a fairly new document and work in progress, and we try to add to it as we learned by going through with our new apprentices, and for that reason we've made a few clarifications that, as you mentioned, on page 90 and 91 to make it very clear what managers need to do in terms of specifying the fixed term duration of the apprenticeship and details around the standards, the apprenticeship standards. So they've been included into the manager's guidance document. So they're the minor changes that we've made to those documents.
Yeah, seemed very straightforward. I mean, these changes will be by the Jim and also the senior management team have already been agreed.
Yes.
So the question is, Richard?
Well, yeah, I mean, Chairman, as you make me to say, I see this is an information item, and we're being asked to note it.
Yeah.
So in a sense, there's nothing that we could say or do that even would change it, is there?
I don't think there is. It's a procedural thing, it's for information. The recommendation is that revisions of the attendance management guidance, job profile template, organising change policy and procedures and guidance on recruitment and employment be noted. Is committee... David, please.
David Smart. It's just so I understand this, this is page 81.
Yeah.
The last paragraph, is that still in? Because it sort of doesn't read right. And it just says at the end, a redundancy payment. What does that mean?
Page 81.
Yeah, or 21, little 21.
Yeah. So at the bottom.
And then at the bottom it says a redundancy payment, and the bit is crossed out. What does that mean?
There's a redundancy
payment.
Words missing somewhere on that.
Yeah, there is. So employed for 2 years.
I think it's probably over the page again, but I don't think it wants coming out.
It's just,
yeah.
It's a bullet, isn't it? So you have to read it.
Yes.
Employees with at least 2 years continuous continuous service with the body listed on the modification offer, but who are not members of the local government pension scheme, and that's got a hyphen, a redundancy payment.
Yeah, what's that mean?
If you just go up those two bullet points, where it reads the following provisions apply, and then there's two bullet points, and then it makes more sense.
So the following provisions apply,
and then it lists the two provisions.
The redundancy payment.
Yeah.
Are you happy with that, David?
It doesn't read very well,
but it does make sense when you point out like that. You satisfy with that? A redundancy payment will be made. Is the committee happy to do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was an eagle eye.
I was going to say, you get the meeting's prize, David, for
you
spotting
do.
That one.
On page 18.
I've got another one, yeah. I just on page 106, I know you can't alter this, but we talk about stress, but we never talk about mental health. But where do we actually put that into this? The last paragraph again.
Absence.
In addition, in the employee's absence due to workplace stress. Mental health is a big issue at the moment, and I just wondered, I looked through all of this and I couldn't see anywhere where mental health was...
It's such a huge issue, it covers all, everything virtually, doesn't it? Mental health, it is a serious issue, and I'm sure that would be take into account when you're talking about stress is a sort of almost a mental health issue, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the way that it's managed is mental health is dealt with in the same way as any of the other protective characteristics, which are form a disability. So there's advice to managers that if anybody has a disability, then they need to make reasonable adjustments as they go through the attendance management process. So it's really about that is subsumed into the if an employee has a disability, what reasonable adjustments you need to make.
I agree. I mean, I think it's a good point, David, but I'm personally, I think that covers it off. It is considered as an issue by itself as a disability. Richard?
Well, thank you, Chairman. I think the past few minutes really make me ask myself, okay, we're being asked to note this, it's information, and yet there are small points being raised and need clarification. So I'm not really quite clear of the role of members here. We've got it, we can't in theory change anything, we can point out those some typos. Who takes responsibility for the final read-through and the final sign-off?
In honesty, the senior management team and the Junctum have agreed this already, so they're happy with it. It's for us, really, to make our comments and note, and if we are making amendments, I don't see that as a problem.
Okay.
We can't substantially change it, and I think, in honesty, it's a fair point to talk about mental health, but I'm satisfied what Gail has said does cover it, but as members, I think it's you know, I think it is a good point to raise, but I'm satisfied that that is covered. So that's on page 106.
Yeah.
And
go on then.
I'm impressed that I'm actually able to.
Chair. I think the explanation of mental health is probably quite important. From
I think members have agreed this attendance management policy and procedure back in 2015.
Right.
When it was agreed, the policy and procedure alongside the guidance document, which is about three times as long as the policy you see before you, was submitted at the same time.
Yeah.
And that goes into far more detail about managing people with a disability, what forms a disability and what you need to be doing when, for example, people have mental health issues. So at the moment you're seeing the policy and procedure, but you're not seeing the full package, which you saw in 2015, which did go into much more detail on the guidance document.
I think it's fair. I think it's a fair point to raise. Are you satisfied with that, David?
Yeah, it's something that is really interesting now, and you see more and more of it, and I think it's come to the fore. my view, if you're looking at disability, it's something, mental health, you don't see it. And people don't want to talk about it in most cases. So it is something at the forefront, I think. And we should recognise that.
I absolutely agree. And I think it's becoming, I think what Gail has said gives quite a substantial reassurance. And I think more and more with the issue is coming into the public light, it is being recognised, you're quite right, it isn't a visible thing, but it is a genuine issue which is being given much more credence. It's always been there, but now finally it is being recognised as a disability.
Yeah,
I agree. So,
the typing error or miss thing, this is on the page 118. Where it says appendix, and that should be appendix A, I think, additional procedural requirement. And I think simply A is missing.
Okay.
That's page 118.
Okay.
Am I right?
That's the next report, isn't it?
118, page 118.
Sorry, is it on the next report? No, it's all to be.
So whereabouts on page 118?
Oh, at the top in the green, is
that?
Yeah,
top in the green.
So
should have been. And then you turn over, and it is. You've got appendix B, haven't you?
Oh,
appendix B, what the format of the important format is.
Yeah, you're right.
So it should be appendix A,
appendix A, in the green, but at the top.
Only a little thing. We ought to be right, haven't we?
Oh, no, we should be right. Yeah, you're right. Thanks for that. So,
and it shows our edit.
It does show your edit, and it also shows that I can work my paperless. I have to take this out. And actually find the pages. You'd have to be struggling. I hope you don't do any more pages.
I'm the one in the
bottom right hand corner.
Yes, yeah, no, I've got it. Well, don't do any more pages, do you worry about, David? I can't cope with it. Right, so is committee happy to note this policy?
With the different points
David's made. Great, thank you. So, everybody happy with that? Yeah, good. Right, so the next item is managing employee performance and the C and DNC policies and procedures. So, this is to gain approval of the Personnel Committee to implement revised management employee performance policies and procedures and a revised employee performance guidance document. So, Gail, please, can I ask you to just run us through this, the background to this and the reasoning behind it?
Yes, within the last 3 years, we have amended all of the key policies and procedures, and conduct and attendance, etc., apart from our capability procedure. Feedback that we've had from incidental information, from staff surveys, from investors in people interviews suggests that that is an area that the council could be doing better in managing employee performance. So it's both timely to look at our capability process, and it's an item that we need to focus on. It's also part of our people strategy to review the performance reviews in 2019. So in advance of that review of the performance review process, we've looked at the HR policy that supports managing people through employment issues. What I've tried to do, if you look at page 108, is that I've compared our current policy, which has been in for some time, on one side of the table, and what is proposed within the new policy to summarise the key differences to the new policy and direction.
Sorry, I'm not sure that's 108.
No, it isn't. It isn't
100. 100. Okay. It's page 100. My apologies, yes. On page 100, I've compared the key differences from the old capability policy to the new one to give an indication of the direction that we're looking to go. We've changed the name from a capability policy to an employee performance policy and procedure. Before putting this policy together, I did have individual meetings with each head of service to talk about how they manage performance within their section and the sort of ideas that I've gotten from the feedback from that and from SMT. This is the result of what we've done. The old policy tended to stand alone, separate to the performance review. And this one is much closely aligned to management one-to-ones and performance reviews meetings. The purpose of the policy has moved from in getting people to an acceptable level of performance to sustaining acceptable level of performance. We put far more monitoring periods in, so we're not just looking for people to be able to meet an improvement plan and then perhaps slip again. We're looking for continued and sustained improvement in performance. Previous capability policy was fairly dated in terms of capability and disability issues. The new one has a whole page on medical issues, including mental health issues and how to manage people whose health potentially contributing to their performance. It also includes advice about counter complaints, and this mirrors what we have in other policies. It's not unusual if a manager is starting to manage somebody's attendance or their conduct, for an employee to put in a counter complaint, and this paragraph mirrors what we have in others. It's about considering what the complaint's about, and if it is purely about being managed, then that management continues. If the manager isn't managing them appropriately, then we would consider it. So that is much clearer, and you know, managers do report that sometimes that they feel quite intimidated by the counter complaints and being able to manage people. We've changed the stages with a lot more emphasis on the informal stage and helping people to improve their performance, and about resolving issues as soon as they apply. And that's in the policy and procedure, which is the document that tells managers what they need to do, but there's much greater guidance in the guidance document about having those conversations. Managers report that that's probably the most sensitive area to talk to somebody about. It's not as objective as saying either you're not attending or your behaviour is not. It's very much a judgement about telling people that their performance has slipped or isn't up to standard and what the requirements are. So there's far more guidance for managers in tackling those conversations and getting them started. The formal procedure, previously, the formal procedure in the capability policy was a formal meeting and if performance didn't improve, a hearing with a potential appeal, and then a final hearing where dismissal was appropriate. The formal stage in this policy is quite different. We had a lengthy conversation with the trade unions about this. I did anticipate they'd have concerns about going from one hearing, two hearings to one, but they could see that hearings can be as stressful for employees as they are for managers, and when we formalise things, we want to be at that hearing stage near the end of the process and not before. So the formal stage now is that there's a formal meeting with the manager managing the performance and that manager's manager, and that's what's being reported back to me. Managers who are managing performance need that level of support from their line manager, and their line manager understands the job. So at that stage, it's very much within the service, and that line manager will have a meeting with the employee and with the line manager and the senior manager, and at that stage there's a decision about, has the line manager done everything that they can to help this person to improve? Are there other things they need to look at? And then that senior manager will make a decision about what happens from there. So that replaces the first hearing. Dependent on the outcome, and if performance is still not up to standard, then we've also introduced that check and balance that we have in all the other policies. The line manager would compile a report which would go to an independent decision maker. So at that stage, it moves from within the section to a report being made, the paperwork submitted with a report to an independent decision maker, usually a different head of service, who will have that objective head read the paperwork and either send it back and say, I think you could try something else, or I think this case needs to go to a hearing. And at that stage, it would go to a hearing, and that hearing could be a decision to dismiss. So we've altered the formal stage substantially by keeping it in-house, having an independent decision maker, and then just one hearing and one stage of appeal. And the trade unions actually agreed with it and are supportive of the approach.
Okay.
Richard.
Thank you. I make a few points, if I may.
Yes, please do. Yeah.
First of all, I really welcome the emphasis on the informal stages earlier on. That's a really good idea, I think. I understand the point about greater clarity, Is it fair to say that with the greater clarity and in hand comes a certain extra rigour? That's the feeling I picked up from reading the changes. Is that a fair comment, do you think? Clarity and rigour?
Yes, we would hope that managers will address poor performance at the early stage. And if it's addressed at the early stage, we're hopeful that that will lead to more successful changing the way.
Okay, may I just carry on, Jim?
Please do.
My third point really is picking up your remark, you hope managers.
Yeah.
And my third question was going to be, is the authority confident that all those who are required to implement this policy are both confident and trained and feel able to do so? Because policies can fall, can't they, if those required to implement them and sometimes take difficult decisions don't feel able to do it. So that's my third question, and my final point I made while speaking, Chairman. This is maybe one of those small things, just caught my eye.
Yes.
I see on page 100, that's of our agenda, papers 100.
Yep.
I see in the right-hand column under proposed section, the third box down, the word sustain introduced rather than achieve, and I welcome that. Now, am I misreading something? Because when I look on to page 103 on our papers, under 1.3 and 1.4, I see the word, under 1.4, I see the word achieve still used twice. Should it say achieve and sustain to be consistent with the previous page, or have I overlooked some point? I think the sustain word is good.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm wondering why, am I misreading it? Why I can't find it in 1.4 along with achieve.
I think you're right, I think it needs to be in there.
Right. It seems to be quite a fundamental point, actually, about this policy.
It's a fair comment, because it is a change. We're looking for sustained performance, not just hitting a target and then falling back to where you were before.
Having said that, Chairman, given that page 100 removes achieve and puts in sustain, do we need to have achieve and sustain in 1.4, or will just sustain by itself be what we're trying to say?
Well, I think achieve and sustain, because they've got to achieve it to be able to sustain it.
Yes, it's a quibble, Chairman, but I'm just pointing out that
I think it's fair.
Achieve is removed and sustain goes in.
I think to achieve it and then sustain it.
As long as sustain is there, I think we've got the point.
Yeah.
But my other question was, is the authority confident that all managers or those required to implement policy feel both trained to do so and confident in doing so?
I think that's an excellent point, and that's part of the drive with this. Our development section are constantly providing training on things like having difficult conversations, that sort of skill training. So that background skill training is available to managers and is part of some of management programmes, and that builds confidence. When we're implementing now major change policies, as we did with the attendance policy, we provide management briefings, and the plan for this one would be to take this, if it's agreed, to take this to CMT, to heads of service, to do a presentation to them, for them to understand how they can support their managers in managing performance and how this policy works in that way. And then there'll be mandatory HR briefings for all managers about the policy, about the changes, and to clarify for them their role in this and the level of support that's available
so
to them.
Would it be fair to ask, by when do you think that process will have been gone through enough for the authority to feel that confidence I referred to? I'm really thinking, Jim, could we have a report back at a future date to be agreed?
As the managers
implementation
are,
of it.
That are confident in implementing the...
Confident, feel fully trained and supported, and therefore, I would hope, feel confident in implementing it.
Yeah, am I right in thinking if there's somebody who's going to do a manager needs some support in the process, it is available through HR?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's one-to-one support and coaching.
Right.
When managers
at all
are,
times. So,
yes.
So if somebody didn't feel confident, they could be made confident, couldn't they?
Yeah.
And if they feel willing and able to come forward.
Oh, I think we'll make sure that they are willing and able to come forward, won't we, Gail?
Yeah, and that's the purpose of the briefings, and that's the purpose of having the heads of service on there.
Well, there's no point in being a manager if you haven't got the confidence to come forward and say, I don't know what I'm doing, can you please help me? Why they're there.
It is, isn't it, one of those loopholes that
a policy I think it needs really reiterating the people who are managing the people. If they are not confident, they need to seek guidance. Can we do that?
Yes, most definitely.
Managers quite clearly need to accept, sure they hope they'll do, that it's part of their daily job is managing people. Could we receive a report in a year's time, something about the service? That'd be reasonable? Is that too long, too short a period?
It's certainly not too long. I would envisage that when we've talked to heads of service and conducted it, it's usually four briefings to include every manager so that everybody's been on the training.
Yeah.
I would envisage that would be early in the new year before all those processes have gone through. What we do is record all our HR cases, and what we've noticed is that since we had the exercise with the attendance, then we have more attendance cases. We have conduct cases. Managers quite confident at managing behaviour. We have very few formal cases for capability. Well, we would want to deal with this in the informal stage.
Yeah,
you know, that recording will demonstrate whether managers are starting to address it and come to us. We've only had two in the last 2 years that have been formal. If that doesn't make a change after, say, 12 to 18 months, then perhaps we do need to go back to the drawing board and do more training to managers.
See, we're reporting a year's time.
I think that's fair enough, if you just tell us how it's getting on. But I mean, in the interim, in the next year, if anyone on it is not confident in executing this, there is support available to them, isn't there?
If I may add, Chair, I mean, I think the report's absolutely fine, and
there are
metrics available. I think, as sort of Gail alludes to, whether there's more cases or less cases, you wouldn't necessarily be able to assess whether they're successful or not. So certainly we can record things like, has everyone been trained, which is fine. I don't know whether it's in Gail's couple of cases, we did dart down a capability with an individual who concluded that he was better off resigning before we went into the process. Now, how we would count that or judge that is a moot point. Certainly, as the panel has mentioned, I think dealing with these things at an informal stage is very, very preferable. And I would like to think that things get dealt with that basis. And in a way, once you start getting down the formal route, things get difficult.
Yeah. I agree.
Mary.
Yes, thank you. Mary Draycott. Two things. The first is following on from the comments that's just been made.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's good that the hearings have been reduced to one, because it is very stressful for everybody.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, the conclusion as soon as possible is to be the goal. The thing about making more emphasis on informal resolution has got benefits, but if you've got a manager who's weak, who's a bit lack of confidence to deal with it, that informal can go on too long, so there needs to be something in there to actually make sure it's done in a certain period, that it doesn't go on and on, because then you just continue with the stress and all of the problems, you know, with having two hearings. So I think that would be my one concern about the informal resolution. And then talking about performance, made me think about the email that went out recently about staff not wearing security tags on occasions. And I was quite surprised, the reference it was made to staff bringing children into the building and that they weren't signed in and what have you. This might not be the area to deal with this,
but
I'm going to try it for May.
Yeah.
Because that, you know, the emphasis these days is about security, and I'd have thought all staff would have known that from day one in their induction, that you have to wear your identification. So that's my second concern. And my third is, do we allow children into the building ad hoc? when I know the stress is on parents when the child takes ill and you're just going out the door, but is this place really the right place for children to come? I would say no. So has that ever been looked at as a policy, or do we have a view on the matter? Because if you have children, there could be accidents. Who knows what's going to happen? Yeah. So that's three things, yeah. Really.
Okay, true. Okay. I don't know whether this is the correct forum to deal with them all here tonight. To be honest, we're looking at this employee performance. It's got nothing at all to do with bringing children into the office. But it is an area which I will allow to go on. What would your answer to that be?
I have seen occasions where people bring in children and,
right.
and people bring in new babies and talk
yeah.
to their colleagues and
oh, yeah.
and that, you know, that is part of the team building. It's,
yeah.
it's I suppose the concern is around safety. It's not something that has
no.
particularly concerned me in,
no.
in that, you know, that has happened. People bring in their new babies.
Yeah, yeah, don't have a problem with that. Staff
yeah.
coming back and showing off the new
yeah.
baby, that's lovely.
Yeah.
Not a problem.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of like school holidays and you've got the children coming
right.
in for the week.
No,
no, I've not.
That's
the
difference.
No,
I
don't think there's a couple of things to this sort of practical
yeah.
terms. So one is there were a couple of security in incidents. So there was some member of staff. Premises staff found a courier who had been let in without a pass, wandering around the building lost. So it was harmless, but the security were very, very, very unimpressed that that had happened.
Yeah.
So actually, they drafted an email which was down-tuned significantly to the one that actually went out to staff. but that, so there was that particular incident. I think there was a particular incident with children. I have to say, the only child I've seen in the I think I've seen two. I can remember two instances. One with where children have been in. One was my son who I had to bring in, who had chicken pox, so I had to bring him in, so get my laptop and go home. So,
nice.
And the other was Eileen's daughter a number of years ago when Eileen had a meeting,
yes.
and myself and Suzanne Kinder had to help with her colouring outside while we were waiting for the meeting. They're the only two instances, so very, very rare. I've never seen children come here and be unsupervised.
Okay, I mean, I think we're not going to go complete.
The email implied,
yeah.
didn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I don't want to go complete.
I think it's very rare. There was an incident that premises staff were very, very unhappy about it, and we felt it necessary to reiterate that because you're absolutely right, security is paramount. We've all got these.
Yeah.
We really.
Okay. I think it's a given. We don't want people wandering into the building who shouldn't be in the building, and two, as a matter of course, unless in an emergency. Children will not, we're not running a crash or anything else. So, if we can move back on to the agenda item, and that was, and the informal procedures, how long do we take?
Yeah. It does tend to be as long as it is. There are time limits in terms of improvement plans, so there's a suggestion that if managers use an improvement plan, it's for a period of 4 to 8 weeks. It's not open ended, and for this reason, we've also introduced that senior manager supporting the manager with the case, and that's, you know, that's that watching eye, so that there's that one to one where the manager will say, how are you getting on with this capability? You know, sometimes it needs to be longer, and sometimes it doesn't, but that's why we've introduced that. Level of support, with the hope that is going, with a plan that is going to.
So in other words, there is a finite scale. Obviously, as life in general, there is no one rule that fits everything, and a certain amount of flexibility makes sense.
Yes.
Does that satisfy you, Mary?
Yeah,
but I think it's a good
weeks.
Point.
Yeah.
I think it's a good. It's a very good point, David.
David Smart, could I just say to Gail, I really welcome the flowcharts. I did speak about this previously, I think it makes it really clear what we're trying to achieve, and it does give an indication of what the process is.
Yeah.
Could I just go back to page 118, which is Stage 2 Personnel Committee. And it says on the second paragraph, Stage 2, the meeting of the Personnel Committee. Should that not be the panel that does that, that's supported by this personnel committee? Because it reads a bit strange that one member of the cabinet should be present. if it's a personnel committee, it doesn't need that. So, and when we're doing sort of things around performance and such, it is down to the personnel panel that is recommended by his committee.
This is specific to these three officers of the council.
Yes.
And this is taken from the agreement of the JNC capability process. So right. to a large extent, what we put in for the JNC staff is dictated to us by the National Agreement for Chief Officers. We have a lot more freedom to, monitoring officer. We've got a lot more freedom to decide who the panels are, etc., for NJC staff. But this is clearly dictated by the National Agreement and the terms and conditions for chief officers.
So it's the full committee?
The full committee will do this.
At the stage two, it's members of the personnel committee. With at least one member of the cabinet.
Yeah.
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 So it's a whole committee plus a cabinet lead.
Well, including if there's somebody from cabinet, aren't they? Presuming that would be all right, wouldn't it? As long as we're in cabinet panel. Yeah.
So the makeup of the committee as it is at the moment is absolutely fine.
Yeah.
For this purpose.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay.
All right. Are you happy with that, David?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry to interrupt. While we're on that page, because we were looking at it, just to point out that the amendment we agreed on the last item, where we need to say Appendix A,
I was in the front of myself, wasn't I?
Yeah. So I'll minute it.
Mary did swipe my hand.
Okay.
Just
like
on that page as well.
And then
Mary
did swipe my hand.
Neither a Tory officer.
Right. So we've now come to the end of
Sorry, that'll be very quick, Chairman, I promise. Again, just to welcome the informal stage bit, I think that's good. Do we monitor managers in terms of what poor performance looks like? Now, sometimes that sounds a stupid thing to say, but I've known from personal experience whereby you have one set of rules covering an entire department, in my case I'm thinking of regionally. Someone in Nottingham's performing and they're poor performing, and someone in Northampton is doing the same thing and is perfectly fine. Now, if you end up telling someone off for one thing, you have to have consistency, I think. Otherwise, that really breeds unhappiness, to put it mildly. So do we monitor, do we train and keep contact with line managers to say this is what it looks like? Consistency is vital.
That's something that we see as the role of the head of service, and that was the conversations that I had with the heads of service. How do you manage performance in your service, and how does that permeate to managing the employees? And there was a level of consistency, not totally, but there was a level of consistency with along from the heads of service in their responses to those questions.
Okay, so I mean, it is applicable, which is a good point. It's a very good point, because consistency and what we're managing, what looks good rather than, what looks good rather than model.
Especially for the teams whereby some members may be away from the line manager. Those that are near the line manager and I can see you're coming in 10 minutes late.
Yeah.
But someone over in Leicester or something, maybe an hour late, and you'd never know.
Yeah.
So it's not fair to talk. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I do. So, has everybody had everything they want to say about managing employee performance? Right. Yeah? Okay, so the recommendation, the first outcome, to agree to the information of the revised managing employee performance policies and procedures, and the revised employee performance guide document, and the reason for outline on page 98. Is everybody happy to do that? With the amendments that have been discussed.
Can I just check, Chair, that includes the report back in 12 months?
12 months, please. So that if managers are confident to do it, but in the interim, We do know that they've got the support of personnel should they need it. So the next item is the Chief Executive's performance and development review, which is an interesting report and outlines exactly how the procedures should and will be undertaken. Seems quite clear. Has anybody got any queries they want to ask? Oh, my goodness me. A show of tree, man. David.
Was I first?
Yeah, I think you were.
David Snart. I welcome this. To my view, it's been a bit difficult, and it was Mark itself that spoke to you about it.
Yes, it was, yeah.
The one thing I'm really pleased about is we've got the Democratic Service Manager arranging this now.
Yes.
I did ask previously how it happened over the last 5 years.
Yeah.
I still not understand how it's happened, mm-hmm. probably not. But it seems a good way forward for me. I'm pleased that we now seem to have a process in place and we can actually put in input into it.
Yeah, I think so, and I've picked out of it the Democratic Service Advisory now to ensure that it is timetabled in properly and this is done every year on time, irrespective of any circumstances. Leader, you wanted, I think you thought you were first, didn't you? You probably were.
I was the first
should be last. Yeah.
Oh, Morgan, I was outbid by it's really just, I mean, I agree with David's comments about the need to set these things down. I think it's important. Likewise, having not been on the personnel committee until very recently, I haven't seen how Charm would have actually managed that relationship between the UN chief exec and clearly since November, I've been finding my relationship to make it work effectively. The only point about all of this, I mean, the effectiveness, I think, of reviews is always more important than the process. And sometimes the more formal the process, sometimes the more sort of clunky it becomes, and as a result, it sometimes lacks the sort of freedom to innovate and discuss changes. And my only comment about this, I mean, I appreciate this is probably a much more slimmed down version of maybe whatever's gone before, but if there's any way of, so for instance, at the moment, comments come back to the leader, and then the leader actually then puts those to the chief exec, and then the chief exec sends back some suggestions for inclusion in an action plan.
Yeah.
And then we have another step, which is actually the appraisal interview with the panel, et cetera, et cetera. Is there any way within the process to actually just have the panel and the chief exec sitting together in a room to actually just discuss the PDR, rather than necessarily go through quite a few sort of sub-processes before eventually everyone gets into the same room? Just really a question. Is this a strip back as it could possibly be, or are there actually stages that could actually be simplified?
Well, it's a good point. I remember doing it many years ago, and I think that's pretty much exactly what did happen. The chief executive produces performance against results, and we did have around the table meeting and like that. What would your comment on that be, Gail? Could we sort of use this year's as a trial run, and if it needs amendment, come back?
Almost certainly, and yes, you're right. The discussions are the most important part of a real performance review.
I think it's a fair point because I want to say the point about it being clunky. The role of the chief executive is pretty extensive. I think it would be good to have a more open discussion about it. What I would suggest with the panel, with the committee's agreement, is that we use this process next, this coming performance review, have a look and actually suggest and make amendments to it if need be. Are you happy with that, leader?
No, I absolutely.
All right, so that's what we will do. Richard.
Chairman Shepherd. I think the question a member of the public, if you ever read this, would ask is, gosh, you're halfway through the municipal year, Chief Exec hadn't had an appraisal of last year.
Yeah.
And has got no objective set for
the year we're in.
This isn't what the report says to the public.
No, I
believe, Chairman, we need something said and minuted to explain to that member of the public, if he exists and reads this, what's been going on. Because as it reads, I repeat myself, you're halfway through, no appraisal of the previous year, no objective set for the current year. How is the Chief Executive supposed to operate in this situation? How can he be assessed? And what's more, have other officers had their PDRs for this year? And if so, what are they saying? Hang on a moment, I've had mine. What about the Chief Executive?
I think
we need clarity for the sake of that.
I think that's a fair comment. I mean, the Chief Executive's role is to deliver the corporate plan, and he relies on the various directors and heads of service to deliver the business plan. But for the sake of clarity for the minutes, it might be worth actually making that point that, you know, the Chief Executive does have his objectives set already at the beginning of the year and is well aware of what they are and will be judged against them. Mary?
I was going to ask about objectives. I mean, have had an email about the process and asking me to make comments on what the Chief Executive's produced, but I haven't got the objectives from last time, so it would be handy for them to be circulated before I reply, Chair.
Okay. So, we can do that, can't we?
Could I just come back, David Sam? Who set the objectives this time? You keep saying there was objectives set.
Yeah.
Who set them?
Well, as far as I'm aware, it's a corporate plan leader.
Well, David, sort of coming to the slightly new, so obviously sort of trying to actually learn what's been happening over the last few years. So there have been, there's recently been an exchange of email, and Tom's comment is absolutely right, which is there are the long-term objectives, which is set by the corporate plan, effectively the sort of structure for the council. But then there are also some individual short-term objectives, and certainly the paper that Councillor Draycott referred to refers back to, I think, the objectives that have been set by Councillor Slater previously, and those are either met or haven't been met, or the explanation as to where we are on those.
Sure.
Now, the ones that have been discussed between the Chief Exec and myself, they will come to this meeting. I mean, they will come to the panel for agreement as objectives, and that's really where I would like them to be. I mean, I can talk to him about what I think his objectives are, but fundamentally it's the panel that need to actually sign off.
This committee.
Well, we nominate a panel.
We have got a panel.
And I think that's probably the right way, because the panel at the end of it are going to be reviewing those objectives in less than 12 months' time, to see how they've been met and whether they've been achieved.
Yeah.
And I think as a result, it's right that the panel be involved with those objectives and sign those off. So you're right in the sense that those individual objectives for this year are haven't come to this panel yet, and they need to, and that's the meeting that we need to have. And those are the ones that the panel will be reviewing at the end of the 12-month period.
Yeah. So, in other words, when we do the performance review this year, the performance targets for the panel are going to be available and agreed.
And some of those, quite obviously, will be objectives that I think roll over from the current set, because some of those haven't been achieved, but there will be new ones.
Mary?
Mary Draycott. So, we still need the current objectives, even though they're a bit out of date.
Absolutely, and that's something that hopefully can be circulated.
Yeah.
So we'll get those circulated. All right, so when we come to the panel, we know. Richard.
I think I've just pictured the post-it.
Nanosecond. Wave of a finger.
Richard Shepherd, can I just be clear about the appraisal for 17-18? I'm not quite clear where we are with that at the moment.
As I understand it, the appraisal of 17-18 is imminent.
Yes, because it ended in
March, April.
Yes.
So
that's. I mean, I've seen a copy of it, so I'm assuming that will come to the panel as well.
It will.
It will do. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. It will.
Yes. Go, Jeff. Yes. I'm
sure it will.
Before this meeting, Jeff said it should be coming along, and I think he said it's with the panel or with yourself. So I think he, as far as the chief executive is concerned, it's in the process now, so it should appear.
Right. Thank you, Simon. David, do you want to say something?
Thank you for letting me come back, David Simon. Mary's just said that we need the objective.
Yeah.
We've only got until the 5th
yeah.
to actually get our responses back.
Okay.
Can we can we have a time?
Get them out immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we do that? Can we get the objectives out to Chief Executive? So
sorry, I must have plot here slightly.
We are for, got this is for 17-18.
Yeah.
It's the objectives and the reply to the objectives effectively that we want to get circulated so
to,
that
to the
comments that you're talking about can actually come back.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the panel will be setting the new objectives.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
But we've got to check that we've been asked to get them in by the 5th.
Indeed. Yeah.
So it's quite
indeed.
Time.
So we say we need that out.
Yeah. Who's doing what budget? I'm sorry, not bothered.
Sorry, who
those,
are doing what?
Sorry, those that are on the panel
yeah.
have been emailed.
Okay.
By the chief executive.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that's what we've got to
but
do.
We
we've
need
got
that
to,
information.
We need the objectives
we can
for 17-18 before we can do it. Then we're going to set the objectives for 18-19, even though it's September 18.
Yes.
And the thing that, so.
Yes.
We're slightly out of sync.
Well, we're looking at out of sync. I think the report.
There are all sorts of very good reasons why we're out of sync.
Oh, yeah, there is.
So
there is very good reasons why we're out of sync. But what this process does here is ensure that we don't get out of sync again, and the Democratic Services Manager is going to keep us on track in all future years.
Just for the sake of clarity for this member of the public reading our minutes, apparently.
If you can find one who's reading our minutes, I'll be very impressed.
I mean, there's a queue formed as I speak, I believe, you know. They better set a mark in here. Can I just be clear what the good reasons are? I didn't quite follow that point.
Well, the last leader passed away, which
yes.
is before he could do it,
right.
before he could set the,
okay.
you know, before he really had, and then the new leader was appointed, and so there has been a sort of between.
So there's the clarity, thank you.
And that, so those are the reasons, and I just hope that we never come into a situation like that again. But what I think the points that have been made here are, one, the Democratic Services Manager, to be fair to everybody, the Democratic Services Manager will manage the process, the panel will set the objectives, and the panel will review the objectives, and we will have the objectives for 17-18 before the 5th of October, so we can then send our comments back. And now the process should be a lot more clear. So we are recommend that the recommendations of the Democratic Services Manager be asked to arrange panel meetings to undertake the Chief Executive's PDR covering the appraisal for the year 2017-18 and also the target setting for 18-19 as soon as convenient. Is the panel happy that we do that?
Yeah.
Okay, all in favour? Thank you. That's everybody.
I'm not on the panel, Chairman, so am I voting or not?
You can vote on tonight only, Richard, you can vote.
Well,
you're a member of this personnel committee and therefore you can vote. The next item on there is the new National Joint Council pay spine for the 1st of April 2019. And again, this is being agreed by the National Employers and JC Trade Union side. Gail, please, can I ask you just give us a brief overview of this?
Yes, yeah. It's probably not my biggest comfort zone, the...
Well, it certainly isn't mine.
But we've had a working party looking closely at the national pay spine and the agreement and how we can implement that within the council. And that working group consisted of accountants and payroll people, and we worked together to look at a number of potential new pay spines. What was always clear is we need to amend our current pay spine. So we need to amend our current pay spine because the council, like a lot of other councils, chose to delete the lower pay points and in order to pay the living wage as a minimum. And this has caused some issues for us year on year, particularly recently And if I take you to page 173, we have been year on year looking at the pay award that's been agreed. And last year, for example, had we paid just what had been agreed for the lower pay points, then scale points 10 and 11 would have received more than scale points 12. So it's been we've had to manipulate these agreements, and it's come to a point where we need to get back onto the national pay spine. And how we do that, and one of the primary drivers in the clear scheme was that we didn't want any employees to be adversely affected. If we had employees who would lose because of a new pay spine assimilating onto a new pay spine, then that would take us into the realms of seeking a collective agreement, which we have with the trade unions, or if we couldn't do that, having to terminate and re-engage on new terms and conditions. And it was something that we wouldn't do unless we really had to. So we were looking at solutions, and I'll take you to again page 174, where we eventually came forward with two options to the senior management team. The costs of those two options were comparable, and the option one was the option that SMT agreed, and this has been agreed with the trade unions. And the reason that it has been agreed is that it meets all the points of the national agreement. No employee will be adversely affected. And if you see on page 175, then there'll be 133 employees who will gain by having an extra incremental progression. There's no employees adversely affected, and 153 will remain the same. They'll have the same level of pay increments. So we also need not to have too big a pay spines, because that would lead to potentially age legislation. You know, it takes you so long. I have seen authorities with 9 pay points within a pay scale, and you would suggest that that could be challenged under age legislation, because it would take you so long to get to the top of the pay spine. So we were clear that we needed those. And if I take you to the first of Appendix A, we've tried to put an explanation of where we're moving into this spreadsheet. One of the other decisions we needed to make is we can either assimilate people onto new pay spines and then give incremental progression, or we can give incremental progression and then assimilate. We found that by calculating incremental progression and then assimilated, that was why there was nobody adversely affected. You will see by page 177 that you've got the current pay spine and you've got the proposed option one pay spine, and we've tried to code that so that you can see how people will move from one pay spine to the other. The points where there was a little bit of a challenge was points 18 and 22, and you can see that people on the current pay point 18, there's 7 people there. If we hadn't given them their incremental progression before assimilating, they'd have nowhere else to go on the pay points. So we give the incremental progression and then they move on to the next pay spine. For staff who are employed from the 1st of October and would be due an increment on those grades in April, we put in a sentence in their contract of employment to verify that they'll then move on to the next pay spine in exactly the way of the current employees. So I'm hopeful that spreadsheet does help you to see how people will move from one pay point to another, and also provided the current pay scales and the third paragraph within the current pay scales shows you which pay point people will move to. So that's what people are on at the moment. You'll see that our bottom scale point at the moment is scale point 10. People on pay point 10 will be on pay point 3 and will have an incremental progression and the National Pay Award. In order to do this, one thing that we did need to do was to look at what people are actually on those pay points 10, 11 and 12, what are they actually going to be paid as a pay increase this year. Yeah. Now, as I say, last year people on those scale points had more than was recommended, and previously they'd had more than was recommended. In order to bring in these new pay points, it is necessary to give pay slightly less than recommended for 2019. They're not going to be any worse off, they'll come back in line, they've already had a little bit extra. But this was, after looking at first 8 and then 4 and then 2 options, we've come to this option, and by doing this, we bring people back in line with the NJC pay points and future proofs the council going forward to be in line with national agreements.
Okay.
Leader. Jonathan Morgan. Just to say, actually, it was a really good paper, very, very clear. Went through what is clearly quite a complex operation because of all of the different things that are happening. But I have to say that the conclusion, I could see that option one was clearly preferred. And again, good to see that there are no losers. And I quite understand the last point you were making about the over 1 year, but slightly under this year. But therefore, from that point onwards, everything comes together. Yeah. And hopefully, from this point onwards, it becomes a lot more straightforward. You went out to 3 unions, 2 came back and agreed. 1, I think you were still waiting for when you went to press on the paper.
Yeah.
Have you heard anything from Unite?
Yeah.
You have, so they're happy as well. So I have to say, I'm very happy with this.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it is a good paper.
Yep.
And now we've got all agreement with all the unions. So,
has anybody got any other comments they'd like to make?
Just to say, Jill and Dennis Snark, that I'm pleased we paid a living wage, and really it's been good for this council.
It has.
Yeah. It's probably caused a few problems getting the scales right, but it's worthwhile because we're paying a living wage.
Look, with that, so that the Personnel Committee agreed the recommendation, the Personnel Committee agrees the implementation of a revised NJC pay spine effective from the 1st of April 2019 as set out option 1 in this report for the reason as stated. So is everybody happy to do that?
Everybody
in favour?
Agreed.
That's everybody. Now the next meeting we are scheduling, with your agreement, for Wednesday the 5th of December. It is on the date that the County Council takes place, but we're all County Councillors, so if... Wednesday the 5th of December. Not the 11th, the 5th, alright? So it is the 5th that we're looking at, and the email went out. So Wednesday the 5th, and it will be at 6 o'clock. Alright.
Just to say, Councillor Draycott is not County Councillor. Councillor Snark may be an elder statesman.
Sorry, Mary. Sorry. Maybe one day.